the Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after.
Well, first, the tariff landscape seems to be an ever-changing picture. Two very interesting newspaper headlines this morning. The lead story in the Irish Independent, referring to Pascal Donoghue, says Donoghue supports threatening Trump with big tech tax. Pascal Donoghue has indicated support for threatening to tax the ad revenues of US tech companies if talks do not resolve the tariff war. And Micheál Martin, a headline on the front page of the Irish Times, Martin to resist EU tax on US tech firm. So interesting, contrasting views there. And I'm joined by Martin Shanahan, who is the Grant Thornton's head of industry globally and former chief executive of IDA Ireland. I want to get to that tech tax possibility a little bit later, but just in relation to the whole tariffs landscape at the moment, Martin. Maroš Šefčovič is going to Washington tomorrow. He's going to begin negotiations and discussions regarding representing the EU, regarding tariffs in the US. Do you think we should expect much from them early on, those talks?
I think it's going to take time. You know, even a 90-day negotiation window is pretty short for all that has to be negotiated. As we know, the situation has been highly fluid. It is difficult on a daily and hourly basis to keep up with where we're at. Obviously, we had somewhat of a stepping back from the brink during the week in terms of President Trump announcing a lowering of the higher tariff rates back to 10%. Even at 10%, they're high. That is problematic for Ireland and any open economy. The fact that the situation has worsened with China is problematic. We now have a situation where the US has imposed 145% tariffs on China, and they have retaliated with 125%. So, you know, really, the landscape has changed. You know,
but part of that change of landscape, the decision by the Trump administration to pause or to blink in relation to this, surely has weakened their position. So are we in a situation now where when the EU goes over to negotiate, we're kind of negotiating from 10% down? The clipboard of all the figures of all of these tariffs, it's kind of dead in the water, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's a couple of things there. One is that the motivation for the reduction to 10% seems to have more to do with what was happening on bond markets than it has to do with a change of strategy. I think the challenge here is it's difficult to read the strategy. I suppose the global approach to negotiating trade and trade organizations. It's not alone that the baby has gone out with the bathwater, but the bath is actually gone. We don't, you know, we're on a very uncharted territory. I think also it's worth remembering that sectoral tariffs are still in play. So the 25% on aluminium, steel and automotives is still there. And President Trump has said that he will still impose tariffs on pharma.
And is that really likely to happen now in the short term? I noticed, for example, Micheál Martin in that interview, he says that he would hope that pharma will be included in the EU-US trade negotiations, which would mean new tariffs would be unlikely while that process was underway.
Yeah, and I think coming back to your question, I think in terms of what Maroš Šefčovič can do in the short term is agree to at least hold things as they are, that the situation doesn't worsen, and anything to do to de-escalate that. I mean, Europe has already, I think, shown willing in that it didn't retaliate in relation to those sectoral tariffs. They did have a $22 billion package on the table, but decided to hold back on foot of President Trump's announcement. So, you know, in that window and interregnum which now exists, I think it's important that things don't worsen. Having said that, 10% tariffs alone are going to have an impact.
Yeah, I mean, the higher tariffs, in reality, if the Trump pause was triggered by difficulties with the bond market, the US Treasuries market, if in the negotiations aren't going well with the EU and with all of these other countries, Vietnam, Bangladesh, Thailand, everywhere, if he attempts to go above the 10% and back towards what he had previously announced, it will just trigger the same activity on the bond market all over again. His hand has been weakened.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think what we've learned this week is something I think many of us knew already, which is tariffs don't work. They are probably a good stick to hold in reserve and to point to, but actually implementing tariffs doesn't work. It weakens all the players, and it lowers global economic growth and will suppress trade and will suppress foreign direct investment as well.
We are looking now, and lots of countries are having a bit of a rethink about who we trade with, who we export to. America is still and will continue to be a huge market for all of us. And there is some scope for diversification there on trade. When it comes to your old job in IDA Ireland and foreign direct investment, do we have many realistic options in terms of attracting more foreign direct investment from places other than the United States into the future?
I think it's limited. I mean, we have investment from other countries, and maybe for your listeners' benefit, currently, in terms of the foreign direct investment that's here, 53% of it, give or take, is from the US. About 10% is from the rest of the world, and about 30% essentially, thereabouts, from Europe. We, I think, over the years in Ireland, tried very hard to diversify that base. At times, you know, the amount of investment coming from Asia increased kind of right up to the pandemic, but then decreased rapidly. And obviously, Asia suffered probably most there and was the slowest at reopening.
Can that be revisited, do you think?
Difficult in a period where you have obviously a very polarized world between China and the US, where those countries are also trying to deal with the US and maybe looking at foreign direct investment into the US to obviate the need for tariffs.
Does that mean it's a bit too late now, actually? Because
yeah, I don't think it's too late because I think, you know, there has been an active strategy to try to ensure that we diversify our base. And on an ongoing basis about, you know, I mentioned the base there, but on an ongoing basis, about 70% comes from the US, though 20% from Europe and 10% from the rest of the world. It's unrealistic to think that you could increase investment from elsewhere at a time where global FDI flows are already suppressed, that you could increase them by an amount that would compensate from a lack of or a reduced amount of foreign direct investment from the United States.
Why was it difficult to attract investment from Asia?
I think you have to look at a few things there. One is, obviously, we have strong historical, familial, cultural ties with the US. We speak a common language in terms of English, so that those connections exist. The US was using this as a platform to access Europe, so they're accessing the European market. European countries don't require that access because they're already here, and Asian countries are more likely to go to larger countries which have a larger market on their doorstep. And Ireland is not necessarily on their radar. So when I spend time in Asia with IDA and when my colleagues are out there now, explaining where Ireland is, what we're about, what we do, and
you end up back to basics. This is where we are.
The relative size of Ireland relative to some of those countries is a challenge, undoubtedly.
When it comes to the EU strategy and this question of the big bazooka that they are looking at putting on the table, this anti-coercion instrument, which might involve levying tax or a levy on US tech company advertising in Europe, and also it gives them powers around intellectual property and the use of intellectual property. This all sounds very scary for us and our economy.
I mean, given the profile of Ireland's industrial base and given our very significant tech presence and the presence of US multinationals, yes, this clearly would not be favourable from an Ireland perspective. I think from a European perspective, I think the same principles apply, though, as I mentioned earlier, which is, you know, I don't think Europe wants to be using anti-coercion measures. I think they're there. They can point to them. They can say, if all comes to all, this is what we could do. But in a world where that's deployed and where there is retaliation, that's not going to help anybody.
But if you put it on the table as an option, but you're not actually really prepared to use it, it doesn't really work as an option, does it? Yeah, and I see the German finance minister, he's got questions about it. He thinks that the EU needs to be very cautious about using it.
Yeah, and again, I think, you know, the aim of Europe at this point and all players should be to de-escalate rather than to escalate tensions. But there are those in Europe equally who would favour the use of this. And obviously, long predating the current trade tensions, you know, you had European countries who felt that US technology companies should be more regulated and should be taxed more.
What would it mean for us if it was implemented? How bad would it be?
I mean, I think if we were in a situation where anti-coercion measures are being used, it's got pretty bad because we haven't done a deal with the US. Potentially, the tariffs are higher than they are at the moment at 10%. That is going to lead to significant trade difficulties, and the global economy is going to be significantly depressed, and therefore Ireland is going to be significantly impacted.
Well, we'll have to see how it plays out. Martin Shanahan, Global Head of Industry at Grant Thornton and former Head and Chief Executive of IDEA Ireland, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.